One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And thank y'all so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, in the studio, locked down, hiding from the heat, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in the bunker, safe from the storms outside. It's that time of year. There's a lot of thunderstorms, lots of wind, lots of rain, lots of hail, lots of tornadoes. But I'm doing good. My internet went out for a couple hours again.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw them laying some lines. I don't know. I think they need to replace everything on my block. But yeah, man, doing good. Feeling good.
Right. Everything's good. I'm hoping everybody else made it through the storms. It's been a rough few months for everybody getting hammered with all of this stuff. But it's that time of year.
So yeah, we're not out of the woods, right?
No, we're not. Yeah, and it's getting warm here. We don't like that. You know, we talk about it every year. It's fun to get out, but I still like the cooler spring and fall weathers. But hey, what are you going to do? It's going to be in.
Yeah.
It was already, what, 90, let's see, like 97,
mm-hmm.
I think is what it was just a few days ago. And they were like, whoa, oh, just joking.
Yeah, but I saw where it was snowing, like in West Virginia and in Michigan, like a week ago. Like it's still
awesome.
Snowing. So crazy, right? In May. So I just took the family to Scarborough Fair.
Yeah.
We had a good old time. It's a Renaissance festival in a town about an hour away from here called Waxahachie. Boy, you ought to hear people try to pronounce that aren't from around here, right? But it is a good old time. Now, I've been before. I know you've been many times, but it's been about 5 or 6 years since I've been.
How much did you love it?
And
now?
I loved it. And Luke really loved it. Luke got himself a shield. He got him a sword.
Oh, here we go.
And but he enjoyed all the cosplay, right? Everybody dressed up, the LARPing. That's what Luke really enjoys because it's so cool. There's some people with some really elaborate costumes. And then there's other people that it doesn't make sense. Like we saw Boba Fett there. I'm like, this is a Renaissance fair. This ain't sci-fi.
Yeah.
We saw a couple of crazy, you know, monsters, zombies. I'm like, well, that doesn't fit, but it doesn't matter. The costumes out there were unreal. They did a Birds of Prey show. That was pretty cool. Luke really dug the jousting. Of course, he was pretty good at the archery. They had a couple haunted houses. Of course, you know him with horror. He loves that.
He's right in the middle of it.
So he did all that. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. There was some good food. I had a turkey leg. I had some different things, some sarsaparilla. My wife, she bought some like wind chimes that were handmade there. There was a bunch of handmade soaps.
Like we've talked
Got
about
some
before.
Some beeswax. Yeah.
If your neighbor has wind chimes, that means you have wind chimes.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So if there's a Renaissance fair near any of y'all, I suggest you go. It's a good day out.
It's changed so much just since we were kids.
It has.
But
it,
it still kind of keeps that same feeling. Like the falconry exhibit is exactly the same as where we went when we were children.
Yeah, it's probably the same birds.
It's the same guy. I went and spoke to the dude. It's the exact same dude that when we were there in junior high, because I asked him what years he worked there.
Yeah, and so junior high is a long time ago, folks. We're talking about like right around the printing press and all that was came out.
Oh, easy
the
now.
The cotton gin.
Easy now. Easy.
So that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to?
Man, not a whole lot. Hanging out with the granddaughter. The wife was gone for a little bit, so I got to hang out with the grandkids. Got to hang out and just have a good time, basically. Been monkeying around the house. Doing whatever they tell me to do, I go and take care of.
So I got to take care of my mom's dog because my mom and dad are in New Jersey.
Yeah.
They're back up there visiting family. They're going to be gone for about 2 weeks, I think. And then they're going on a cruise to Bermuda. So I'm going to try to time it where we can have a live call in to Pop while he's in the Bermuda Triangle.
To see what's going. Yeah, we'll do it.
I was already giving him crap the other day when I went over there telling him about, you're going to the Bermuda Triangle. You know what that means. I'm like, oh yeah, there's vortexes.
He hates
there's
you.
Alien probing going on. Like it's a bad spot, Pop. I mean, you might be in an Antarctica base with Hitler before you know it, before you come back, you know?
I can't wait.
So that's what I'm doing. Anyways,
we've got to get him to do it.
Speaking of New Jersey,
yeah,
you recently came across a very disturbing sighting in New Jersey. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is. Hold on here. Hold on. All right, we had to take a quick break just so we could look up how to pronounce it. That's what we were doing because of where this place is at. It's Carrizalejo, New Jersey.
That's what it says. Yeah.
All right. This is what. That's how to pronounce it. We're doing better, folks. This is something. Of course, again, headlines grab me, and I'm like, I got to tell Kyle. Joggers encountered a hideous 4-foot-tall troll at Lake Carrizalejo, New Jersey.
Hideous, folks.
Hideous. Hideous. This is what it says. Now, I don't know what it is. I'm going to have to check this year to make sure you and your brother weren't up there at the time this went down. But this is what it says. This is an encounter my girlfriend and her friend had a few years ago, not mine personally. I've heard her tell this story a few times before, but after recently hearing them together describe what they saw, I thought maybe you would enjoy it. Maybe someone has seen something similar. This encounter happened in Lakewood, New Jersey a few years back. It was midday sometime in September. My girlfriend and her friend used to jog together regularly at local parks. The park they were at this particular day is called Lake Carrizalejo, where it butts up to a housing development. The trail they were on loops around the lake, and 3/4 of the trail is basically just a normal paved sidewalk that follows a road, but eventually turns to dirt and through a small wooded area on the far side of the lake. The other quarter of the trail, mind you, is this place is a little remote, but it says far from being super remote because it is New Jersey after all. While jogging through the wooded part of the trail, they came upon a creepy humanoid-looking figure on the edge of the trail that stopped them both in their tracks. They both keep referring to this thing as troll-like. It was short, maybe 4 foot tall at most. It was dressed in a long black hooded cloak, hunched over and sitting on a wooden chest. Yes, a wooden chest. Exactly the kind you'd imagine a troll to be sitting on. When they said they could not see any face at all because its head was directed at the ground and the hood was too long. But what they did notice was the cloak was short enough to see part of his legs, and he was wearing what looked like regular flesh-colored stockings and had very small clubbed feet. Its legs had large protruding boils or tumor-like lumps on the exposed area. It was also wearing blue gloves. Terrified, they eventually made their way past this thing, only to come within a few feet from it, hoping it wouldn't jump out at them. Then they got the hell out of there faster than they'd ever ran before. It didn't say anything or try to cause them any harm. It just sat there hunched over. They thought at first that maybe it was a mannequin or someone doing something like a joke, but they noticed hand movement right before they passed it. Needless to say, they had never gone back to this lake again. Every time my girlfriend talks about this encounter, I can hear the fear in her trembling voice and was obviously somewhat traumatized by it. Even though I geek out about these type of stories all the time, she has absolutely zero interest in any of these types of things. She'll roll her eyes or shake her head and tell me I'm crazy when I tell her about the cool story of Bigfoot or aliens or whatever that I'm reading about, trying to pique some interest in her on these types of subjects. However, she continues to want nothing of it. I'm a very open-minded person when it comes to this stuff, and I can't say I believe in anything because I've never had a convincing encounter aside from hearing a few strange sounds in the woods that I couldn't explain. I always ask myself, is it possible that creatures, aliens, Bigfoot, for these things to exist? The answer is usually yes. But then again, someone just playing a prank to mess with people is extremely more logical sometimes, especially in a place like New Jersey. Thanks, Kay.
Yeah, but how is somebody going to play as a boil-having troll? You know what I mean? That'd be hard to pull off.
I still get being able to build a suit like you were talking about with the cosplay and getting into all of that. I understand all of that, but still at the end of the day, I'm always like, what's the payoff?
Yeah.
If it's not a big YouTube video or a TikTok thing or something like that where you are alerted to later, something along those lines, what would be the payoff of doing it? For the person doing it to maybe get punched? We've all seen those videos it goes bad for the prankster. So part of me is like, yeah, it's probably just a dude messing around. Another part of me is like, but why? What would be the payoff of said prank?
Yeah, I think it's that people see stuff like that because the Northeast has a lot of puckwudgie and troll sightings for whatever reason. I think I love those stories because it reminds me of being a kid and walking around the woods and thinking you hear creepy stuff.
Anything
stuff, right?
That's fae and fantasy fae. Related, I'm down with. I'm here for it all the time.
Well, that's a pretty scary encounter. But check this out. We have a listener.
Here we go.
Not too far away in New Jersey. Says, I came across your podcast looking for answers of what my daughter and I saw in the sky and to see if there are any other similar stories to ours. Now, I am from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And about 2 years ago, my daughter and I were out riding our bikes. It was bright that night due to a full moon. Not many clouds in the sky, but a few that would once in a while make the night a little darker. We stopped by a friend's house. Her and her two daughters came out, and we were all just sitting around talking, and I happened to look up in the sky, and there's this flying, long, human-shaped thing with a wingspan approximately 7 to 8 foot wide. It reminded me of the movie Jeepers Creepers. My mouth was just kind of open, and I was speechless. And I was pointing at it as it went behind the cloud near the moon. I told them what I just saw. Everyone kind of giggled, and I told them, I'm not making it up. And it hasn't come out from behind that cloud yet. Keep looking. Well, to our eyes, it appeared again. My daughter just stood there watching it and repeating herself, Mom, what is that? I know she had that same hard-to-swallow feeling I did, while my friend's two girls ran inside screaming. We watched as it flapped and soared near the moon till it disappeared into the clouds and never came out again. I know what we saw that night, but I wouldn't know what to call it except for a flying human-like creature. An experience I would never take back, and when I hear others, I really want to believe they had seen the same thing I had. My daughter is now 14 and feels there is so much out there we really don't know much about. What is myth and what is real? It's definitely a night we will never forget, and she keeps herself busy during the days by researching the Jersey Devil, the Mothman, Slenderman, and all the stuff you guys talk about. Thanks for all you do, Strazi7. Well, it's another flying humanoid.
That's
This sighting is sightings have definitely been increasing. If you're not familiar, you need to check out Lon Strickler and his amazing website, Phantoms and Monsters. He's been keeping up with the current flap of Mothman-like entities that are seen in and around the city of Chicago. There seems to be a lot going on. This has been going on for about like 4 years now, this flap that we're currently in.
But this, yeah.
It's
well,
strange.
Didn't Lon say that they believe it started way back in 2015 when it first started ramping up. And then it went down. And then, the last, 3 or 4 years has been picking back up again.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's very strange.
So strange. Speaking of strange and a flap. Now, we know this has always been popular. This is one of our faves. When we talk about it, we still don't know. Kyle's always on the fence. Man, we're always on the fence about it. Let me spit this one out. Lon dropped this to me. It says, a Michigan eyewitness convinced a werewolf crossed road near a rural cemetery.
Ooh, do tell more.
Well, it's in Michigan, so here we go, right? It says, hello. I was driving out in the country on a back road near the town of Willis, Michigan. Then something quite startling ran out in front of my car. It literally was running so fast, not only was it on 2 foot, but it was a blur. And this thing had to have been 7 to 9 feet tall.
Man.
It was weird how its legs literally went from the foot back to a joint, like an ankle, then forwards like a joint to our knee, then it went back to the hip. Mm. And it made this thing go so fast, literally went from the front of the back edge of his car, said cruising at 25 to 35 miles an hour past him. Full body pass before it turned and crossed the road.
You know, that's the thing that's common in a lot of these dogman and werewolf sightings is people recognize the odd shape of the back legs.
Yes.
Right? They're always talking about how it's bent backwards. Linda Godfrey, rest her soul, was first to point that out, that there's a lot of the sightings where people notice, like if it's not weird enough that it's an upright walking wolf, but that its back legs don't look like a wolf's legs.
Yeah, they're bent backwards.
They're different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a hybrid between the way our legs look and a dog's legs.
Or what's the aliens? It's the shape that they take.
Yeah, right.
Because it scares
us. Like in The Arrival, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they go on to say that the head of this thing was pointy and it had ears like a Doberman. said its body was like that of a person, except its shoulders were very thick, very strong, like a very well-built man. Its head had remained pointed straight ahead, like it was running. Said its body was longer because, of course, how tall it was. But it looked like a blurry werewolf. And says, since it was a full moon, I thought it was. And it said, I think here, it said it's running so fast because it had a different shape than the human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is. It drops down, runs on all fours, bounces across the road, then jumps up on two. This thing is, this is insane. And that's what the person keeps saying. It had to be a werewolf. Goes on to say that while saying the Lord's Prayer, I was trembling in fear as I sat there. Said, in fact, they drove from there, from that sighting, to a parking lot of the church and slept there in their car until daylight.
Yeah, right. I don't blame them.
So that's what popped off there in Michigan, you know, again.
And that's what's so crazy is a lot of the people when they're recanting and retelling these stories is they know it sounds crazy. They're like, look,
yeah,
I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but this is what I saw. I don't know how to explain it. Speaking of that, there comes another listener story to us. It says, hello, guys.
Hey.
I would like to share a strange sighting I had a few years ago. Now, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't a listener of your podcast, but this guy I work with named Travis is a huge fan of your show.
Big ups to Travis.
Right. Thanks, Trav. He was telling me about some of the strange flying humanoid stories that you guys were discussing and sharing on your show. And right when he said this, I knew something was up. I said, Travis, I've actually seen one of those before. And he was like, no way. He suggested that I listen to your podcast, and I'm glad he did. I've been listening now religiously for the last 6 months. I never knew my encounter has been seen by so many others. I actually kind of forgot about my sighting until I started listening to your show.
Awesome.
I didn't even know that flying humanoids was a real thing. Boy, was I wrong. And now I want to know, what the heck did I see? So here's my sighting. I was traveling on a county road near my home in southern Ohio. This was in May of 2014. It was during the middle of the day. As I approached a stop sign, I noticed a strange-looking object floating a few feet above the road that reminded me of a vertical, shrouded human body or a tightly wrapped mummy. It was all white in color, but appeared to pulsate with light within. There were no wings, and there were no means of propulsion, just a human-like being, shaped being, sitting there floating. The length of this creature, or whatever it was about 8 to 10 feet, but it might have been larger. I had no reference in order to make a correct determination. I stopped my car, and I just watched this object for a few minutes. I did not get out of my car, simply because I had no idea what I was witnessing. Then I noticed that it started swelling in size. Sorry, I can't read. I noticed that it started swelling in size and slowly ascending. It continued to pick up speed and then shot straight up into the clouds. And that was it. That was all that I saw. Thanks for all you do, bruds. Mike. So he wasn't even aware that this was a worldwide phenomenon. He was just like, I saw something crazy, kind of forgot about it, till his coworker was like, oh man, you got to hear about these crazy Texas boys talking about these flying humanoids. He's like, whoa,
dude,
that's
crazy.
What? I saw a Michelin man floating above a road one day, pulsating colors, and it just took off into the clouds. So what are these things? Is it a drone that they shaped like a human? Is it a living entity? Nobody seems to know. My brother is a huge authority when it comes to flying witches and flying humanoids, especially those south of the border. I don't know why. He's been into it since we were teenagers.
He's eat up with it.
But there's some of these poorly taken photographs, but you see them in Mexico especially. It looks like the Inframan characters from the Japanese movies. It looks like a flying person. No device. Although sometimes I have seen where it looked like a guy was in like a lawn chair and was flying it.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's just like a flying human. What is that?
I tell you what I think it is. I think that if I was going to be like ultra wealthy Elon Musk, like crazed genius inventor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have a place down there in the mountains of Mexico?
Yeah.
You could have a big area, a big compound down there. You could pay for protection, whatever. You're building all of that stuff down in there where there's nobody, right? And then you're flying around. You've seen enough James Bonds. Look, you've seen Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Mr. Scaramanga lives on an island somewhere with Hervé Villachez, and they build all this cool stuff. Like, you could live down there in the mountains and build flying people suits.
Yeah, do you think the narcos are freaking funding this stuff?
Well, I mean, they might be, but maybe that's what they're doing to end up for, you know, providing protection or whatnot. Who knows?
Very.
But I know it's been going on a long time.
It has.
I've seen what you're talking about, where it looks like there is a guy. That's why I believe some of these suits are legitimately human beings that invented this and are flying it themselves.
Yeah.
I've watched enough of this stuff on YouTube to watch what these crazy folks can invent and build in their own backyards and make work.
Yeah.
I don't doubt any of this stuff is possible.
Like the
Michelin Man does not seem like something that should be flying.
Like the Sonora Aero Club. Remember back in the day where there was that small group of people that had this technology to build these dirigibles?
That's what I think about all the time.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's when you see them with the wings, the leathery wings that are reported or all of that. No, of course not. But those ones that you see that look like a human being trying to fly that doesn't quite know how, they're just stiff Superman.
Yeah,
looks like that to me.
You remember the guy that was like a Vice interview of a guy like 12 years ago who built a nuclear reactor in his shop?
Yeah.
The crazy guy?
Yeah.
And he was showing that he had a group of people and they would share information on how to build different things. So maybe that is
that going old man's on. In Kentucky, I believe, is where he was from.
I don't remember. But there's like a dark web where these brilliant minds share this technology.
It wouldn't be on the web. Those guys don't trust that. They're that crazy. They're Maybe. Sending pigeons back and forth with stuff written up and they're carrying it in their feet.
Very, very possible. Well, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about Lucky Charms. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Luck is a strange thing. Do you believe that luck is completely random? Or do you think fate has a role in how your life ends up? As one famous athlete stated, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." Now this is true. If you work hard at something, you'll find success more frequently. But what about a lucky object? Do you believe that certain objects can actually change your fortune? Alter the outcome. That these items have some special power. that others don't have. For some, it's a family heirloom that has been passed down from one generation to another. For others, something good happened to them while in possession of a meaningless object, and that same object that was just an ordinary object just a few minutes ago is now somehow imbued with a new power. It's lucky. A lucky hat, a lucky coin, a lucky pair of socks. Everyone has something that they believe gives them a little bit of luck. Maybe you wear it when you go for a big job interview. Maybe you put that lucky coin in your pocket when you go propose to that special someone for their hand in marriage. Maybe it's wearing your favorite hat when your favorite sports team is in the playoffs and they really need a win. Where does it come from? It's not taught. It's universal. I like to believe that there really is some magic still out there. Let's talk about some of these items. The four-leaf clover. Four-leaf clovers are an ancient Irish symbol for luck. Among the Celtic, it was a common belief that four-leaf clovers could help people see fairies and avoid their mischief, a common source of bad luck. The four leaves were rumored to have mystical powers, representing positive attributes. Some legends attribute them to faith, hope, love, and most important, luck, while others say they bring fame, wealth, health, and faithful love. There are many variations of clover that always have four leaves, but the lucky ones come from the white clover plant, or Trifolium ripens. Trifolium literally means three-leaved. Four-leaved plants are a genetic mutation. True four-leaf clovers are rare, with only about 1 in 10,000 plants carrying these lucky leaves. What about a lucky horseshoe? Now, horseshoes are one of the oldest lucky superstitions, with various legends from different cultures attributing lucky powers to them. One legend says that horseshoes are lucky because they are made of iron. Mischievous fairies couldn't stand the touch of iron, so they shield away from houses that had horseshoes on them. Another legend attributes lucky horseshoes to Saint Dunstan. According to the legend, the devil commanded Dunstan, who was a blacksmith, to shoe his horse. Instead, Dunstan nailed a horseshoe to the devil's foot. He only agreed to remove it in the ease the devil's pain when he received a guarantee that the devil would stay away from any house with a horseshoe on the door. After that, any house with a horseshoe was guaranteed to be lucky. Whatever the legend's background, horseshoes make a fun, lucky symbol to hang above a door of your home or just a computer room. Just make sure that the points face up so that the horseshoe can fill with luck. What about lucky dice? You see this lots of times in cars. You'll see a fuzzy pair of lucky dice hanging from the rearview mirror. Or you'll see a gambler's bowling shirt and it'll have some lucky dice on it. Or even a muscle car. Many games of chance are played with dice. So it's no surprise that they became a symbol of luck. You might be surprised to know that unlike many of the lucky charms that we've talking about today, fuzzy dice are a relatively recent invention. During World War II, fighter pilots would fly missions with terrible odds of coming home again. They'd bring lucky charms with them in the hopes of tipping the odds in their favor. Gambling items like cards and dice were popular charms to bring aboard fighter planes. Knowing the World War II tradition, Deco Felt Corp started marketing fuzzy dice to hang on the rearview mirrors of cars in 1959. A new fad was born, and it exists until this day. What about ladybugs? Now, ladybugs are popular insects worldwide, and many cultures believe they bring good luck. In German-speaking countries, they are literally called lucky bugs, or Glückskäfer. How can a ladybug make you lucky, you ask? Some cultures say that if a ladybug lands on you, and you don't brush it off, your luck will improve. Others say that they're a sign of impending love. For example, if a man and a woman see a ladybug at the same time, they'll fall in love. In Belgium, a ladybug crawling across a maiden's hand was a sign that she would soon be married. And that's not the only way ladybugs bring luck. Farmers believed that a large number of ladybugs in the spring was a harbinger of a good harvest for that year. Be careful, however, around these cheerful-looking insects. Killing a ladybug can bring you misfortune. When you pick your lucky charm, keep in mind that all ladybugs are not created equal, especially in the luck department. The deeper their color, the deeper red, or the more spots that they have, the luckier you will be. What about everyone's favorite, the rabbit's foot? Now, lucky rabbit foot keychains, whether real or fake, are popular symbols of luck. The original legend says that the left hind foot of a rabbit that is captured in a cemetery at night can ward off evil magic. It goes all the way back to 1908. There's a British account that reports that rabbit feet imported from America being advertised as the left hind foot of a rabbit killed in a country churchyard at midnight during the dark of the moon on Friday the 13th of the month by a cross-eyed, left-handed, red-headed, bow-legged man riding a white horse. This will bring you luck. Now there's other versions that disagree about exactly when the rabbit must be killed, but they all indicate that the rabbit's foot, especially if you want it to ward off evil, has to be done on the dark of the moon, on a Friday, even better on a rainy Friday, and especially on Friday the 13th. What about a lucky coin? Now, most of us know the old saying, find a penny, pick it up, and all that day you'll have good luck. These found pennies are fun, but some people swear by them. They say that they really are true luck bringers. Some people say that not just as a penny lying on the ground is lucky, but that lucky pennies have to be found facing up. Others think that any free money lying around is lucky. Did you know, however, that pennies aren't the only lucky coins? For example, the Chinese have something called an I Ching coin, which are considered lucky and are often given as gifts of luck on Chinese New Year as well as weddings. So, do coins have the power to bring good luck? For centuries, many have believed that this is true. There are countless stories of how coins have ensured luck and fortune, and in some cases, the loss of a coin has led to failure and even disaster. Let's take a look at some of these coins. The silver sixpence. This is in Great Britain. And in Great Britain, the lucky sixpence appears in the nursery rhyme, Sing a Song of Sixpence, as well as the tradition of hiding a sixpence inside a British child's Christmas pudding to bring good luck for the entire year. Even better known is the mention of this coin in the famous wedding rhyme, Something Borrowed, Something Blue, and a Sixpence for Her Shoe. Now, for centuries, brides have been wearing a sixpence coin in their shoes in the hope that their marriage will be filled with prosperity and good luck. For that reason, the British sixpence coins are among the most popular wedding gifts for brides. What about in Ireland? In Ireland, they have the lucky Irish penny, which was minted in Ireland between 1928 and 1968. Now, in 1926, designs were being considered for this new coin. An Irish poet, William Butler Yeats, was named the design committee's chairman. Ultimately, the committee selected a design of the Irish harp, which traced its origins to a coin first issued by Henry VIII in 1534. The coin's reverse side, it was decided, would feature a hen and chicks, as designed as a tribute to Ireland's tradition of agriculture. These coins were first minted in 1928 and continued to be issued virtually unchanged until 1968. Struck in copper, each coin weighs approximately 1 ounce. The coin's inscription is in Gaelic, the native language of Ireland. Large and relatively inexpensive, the lucky Irish penny is a popular good luck piece carried in pockets throughout the world. What about in the United States? We have the leap year Mercury dime. Now, many gamblers across the U.S. swear by the luck of the leap year Mercury silver dime. This widespread superstition likely stems from an overall belief in the power of silver coins, coupled with Mercury being the god of the crossroads, or fate, as well as chance. The leap year dates that occurred during the run of the Mercury dime series include 1916, 1920, 1924, 1928, 1932, 1936, 1940, and 1944. The belief in the leap year Mercury dime is particularly ironic. However, since the silver dime has long been misidentified as depicting the Roman god Mercury, when it actually features Lady Liberty wearing a winged cap symbolizing freedom of thought. What about touch pieces, also known as healing coins? Now, touch pieces are coins that have been touched by rulers, monarchs, or other powerful beings who are believed to hold their authority directly from God. Now, touch piece coins were extremely auspicious and are said to have demonstrated healing powers. Actually, this practice dates back to the ancient Roman Empire. Vespasian is reported to have initiated ceremonies during which he would hand out coins to the sick. This ceremony became known as the touching. Centuries later, the kings and queens of England and France embraced the same practice, holding regular touching ceremonies up through 1714. The fact that an angel appeared on some British coins from the time of Henry VIII onward further cemented the tradition of the healing coin from the hand of your monarch. The British tradition of Maundy money may have derived from this overall custom, as it features the monarch gifting specific subjects with token gifts of silver coins. Of course, it wasn't always about royalty. Clergymen were also known to hand out, even sell, healing coins during ceremonies, which were said to bring healing powers to the believer. There are many contemporary accounts of people being cured by this method. And a convenient bit of rationale, those who remained ill were accused of not having enough faith. Boy, that's clever, right? Well, if it didn't work, well, you didn't believe enough. Of course, that's a lucky penny, dude. It's luck. You just got to believe. I like these traditions. It's silly, right? It's silly, but it's universal. That's the point. It's not like this is just one corner of the world that believes in these things. It's universal. Everybody has something. What about the dream catcher? Now, dream catchers come from Native American lore. Looks like a web or a net stretched over a loop and decorated with bright beads and feathers, and they are said to catch bad dreams as they enter the household. And by capturing these disturbing dreams, they make the owner happier, more balanced, luckier. Plus, they look pretty cool. What about talismans or amulets? What does talisman even mean? Well, the word is derived from the Greek word telesma, which means sacred object. This refers to protecting or bringing good luck. The word amulet comes from the Latin word amulnetum, which means way of protection. Others say that the word is derived from the Latin word amuleri, which means to turn away. So what is an amulet? And what is the difference between an amulet and a talisman? Protection is the primary function of the amulet, meaning it keeps away bad juju, like black magic and bad intentions that might come your way. Just like a talisman, it is usually a personal item that you carry with you. Think of it this way. Amulets repel negative energies, and talismans attract positive ones. Some objects even do both. Either one is great to carry with you and help you through your day. Which leads me to this next incredible story. Donald wanted nothing more than to fight for his country. So much so that he was counting the days till the end of his time in high school, so that he could go to the local recruiter, enlist, and help out. Finally, that day arrived. His test involved both physical and mental portions. And sadly, while he passed the written exam with flying colors, he was very intelligent. He was stopped short because he had flat feet. His dream of serving was shot down by the government. He felt like a loser. Every man worth his salt around his age was going to war. They were going to Europe, but he couldn't go. He wasn't accepted. He felt terrible. Now back on the family farm, he found his way into a construction job. And during his time there, the war and its demands on the people of the United States began to change how people entered the armed forces. What I mean is, it's because of the draft. It pulled in millions of American men into service, whether they wanted to go or not. By the end of the war in 1945, 50 million men between the ages of 18 and 45 had registered for the draft, and 10 million were inducted into the military. What does all this mean? Well, it meant finally Donald would get his chance to fight. With his trusty Bible in his pocket, he was sworn in on August 21st, 1944, and immediately entered basic training. But since the Battle of the Bulge was putting a strain on Allied forces in Europe, that training was cut short. Instead, he and his fellow recruits were sent to board one of the many luxury ocean liners that had been converted into a troop transport ship. Now, during the 2 days it took to load everyone and the supplies, Donald received his first assignment, cutting the cheese. Literally. He reported to the galley and spent days upon days slicing pieces of cheese for the rest of the soldiers so that they had something to eat. But finally, after a lot of cheddar and many, many miles of ocean, Donald arrived in Belgium, ready to fight. Donald was assigned to the machine gun squad of Company K, the 38th Infantry Regiment, the 2nd Infantry Division. But almost immediately he got sick and was pulled from action to recover in the infirmary for 2 weeks. And it's safe to assume that during his time there, untold numbers of his fellow soldiers were killed in action. Donald was very lucky, to say the least. Soon, he was back on the front lines, though, and hopefully, he would still get his chance to fight for his country. But just 2 days later, he was pulled again, this time because of getting sick from scarlet fever. It was a diagnosis that earned him 5 more weeks in a hospital bed. A break from the action that his fellow soldiers would have welcomed, and one that most likely saved his life once again. His constant companion during his hospital stay was his Bible. He read it every single day. It brought him comfort, and it probably did a good job of keeping his mind off the disappointment he felt from missing the action yet again. However comforting it was, nothing compared to how happy Donald was when he was finally given a clean bill of health and sent back to the front lines, which is where he found himself on March 23rd of 1945, on one of the small hills near the Rhine River in Germany. And everything about that day is exactly what he had dreamed of. After all, he was finally fighting the enemy. Amidst the chaotic storm of bullets and bombs, war is never safe, and Donald worked hard to put himself in a very dangerous situation, which is why I doubt he was surprised when 2 explosive shells landed far too close to a group of soldiers that he was a part of. When the bombs went off, men all around fell to the ground. Donald, too, was thrown off of his feet, shrapnel tearing into his body and face, sending blood and flesh into the air. And there he laid, one more bloody body among hundreds torn down by the machine of war. His company moved on, though, marching forward into enemy territory. They fought hard and lost more of their friends and eventually stopped for the night. That's when a strange shape stumbled into camp. It was Donald. He was alive. Yes, his body was covered in bloody wounds, including a number of vicious cuts on his face. But the biggest piece of shrapnel was one that should have killed him and ended his brief military career. He was still alive, and this piece of shrapnel was still visible, embedded and protruding from his chest, directly over his heart. But there was no blood, because rather than hitting his flesh, The metal had struck his talisman, his lucky Bible. Luck had kept him from serving on the front lines for many weeks, most likely saving his life. But even when he finally had the chance to fight, it was also there to keep him alive, proving that what exactly we considered lucky is often in the eye of the beholder. What about a lucky penny? Private John Trickett kept a coin in his pocket to remind him of home while he was in battle. This was in World War I. It was his lucky penny. He always carried it, and he swears that it always brought him good luck. He carried the lucky penny not in his pant pocket, like most men do. No, for some reason still not understood, not even by John, he started carrying the coin in his breast pocket. Well, one day while in a deadly firefight with German soldiers, John was shot in the chest. The bullet impacted almost dead center on his lucky penny. It ricocheted upwards, hitting him in the ear and deafening him for life. But it did its job. Otherwise, John would have been dead for sure. So is this just a crazy coincidence, or is it something else? Something we don't quite fully understand. It's a lucky penny. What about lucky animals? Now, the Kriegsmarine, or the Nazi Navy, launched the battleship called the Bismarck in 1939, mere months before the Reich invaded Poland and kicked off World War II. By 1941, the ship had reached the northern part of the Atlantic Ocean in an attempt to sabotage the naval envoys carrying supplies between Canada and the United Kingdom. Aboard the Bismarck was a crew of about 2,200 members, and it is said that among them was Unsinkable Sam, a black and white colored cat. Now, we've done a whole episode on Unsinkable Sam, so you'd have to go back and find it in our catalog somewhere, but it's a pretty remarkable story. The Bismarck was destroyed following an intense three-day battle against the British Royal Navy on May 27, 1941. As it sunk, only 114 of the ship's passengers survived, one of them being Unsinkable Sam. As the legend goes, another British battleship, the HMS Cossack, began attempting to rescue survivors of the sunken Bismarck in the open sea. Crew members spotted something unusual clinging to the top of a floating board. It was a cat. The feline was then brought aboard the Cossack and given the name Oscar. But several months later, the Cossack suffered a disaster of its own when it was sunk by a German torpedo. But yet again, Oscar was rescued by the crew of the aircraft carrier, the HMS Ark Royal. It was while aboard this ship that Oscar is said to have received his nickname, Unsinkable Sam. As fate would have it, the nickname would once again prove true, when on November 14, 1941, about a month after he was reportedly rescued, the Ark Royal was torpedoed. The ship was decimated, but Unsinkable Sam went unscathed. He was allegedly rescued for a third time by the HMS Legion, another ship under the British Royal Navy's fleet. So this cat, it was lucky. The sailors perceived the cat as being lucky, so he was a welcome member aboard any ship. They were like, yeah, man, bring the cat. No matter what, we're going to survive if we got the cat with us. So whatever happened to Unsinkable Sam? Well, it's said that after surviving his third shipwreck, he was retired to land and he was placed in the offices of the governor of Gibraltar. He was later adopted by a seaman who lived in Belfast, and that's where he died in 1955. So, lucky charms can have real, measurable effects. Now, past research has shown, for example, that people actually perform better at golf if they believe they're using a lucky ball. But unlucky things have their own kind of power. A man named Matthew Huston, who's author of The Seven Laws of Magical Thinking, explains that there are generally three ways that we assign luck, good or bad, to an object. The first is through association. Say a penny that you had in your pocket the day you met your partner, or the tie you bought for an interview that you then bombed. The second is through symbolism, like socks with four-leaf clovers on them, or black cats on them, or an actual four-leaf clover, or an actual black cat. And the third is through what Huston calls magical contagion, or the idea that something about a person can rub off on their possessions. We believe there is some sort of essence, or physical property, or specialness that can be transmitted via contact. It's part of the reason why people affix such value to family heirlooms, or things previously owned by celebrities, even historical items. A person would be much more likely be inclined to shell out for a chunk of the Berlin Wall than for a random piece of concrete, for instance, even if the two items are fundamentally the same in all but their backstories. But there's not just lucky charms. There's also cursed charms. There's things that are seen as unlucky, like it mentioned, black cats, the number 13, even broken mirrors. In 1994, a paper in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, researchers asked college students how willing they'd be to wear a sweater that had previously been worn by a healthy, average man, compared to one worn by a man who'd been tainted in some way, infected with tuberculosis, survived a car accident, or a convicted murderer. The murderer's sweater, they found, was nearly as unappealing as the one worn by a man suffering from tuberculosis, despite the fact that the murderous tendencies, unlike bacteria, couldn't be transmitted from one person to another. More recently, research published last year in the Advances in Strategic Management analyzed more than a million eBay listings for which secondhand engagement rings, and found that rings were much less likely to sell if the listing hinted that the previous owner had been through a divorce or a broken engagement. When the researchers also surveyed consumers about the rings, they discovered that even though people were more likely to believe these rings from failed relationships were real diamonds, they were also less willing to spend money on them. We humans, for whatever reason, have kind of evolved to believe that various properties can be transmitted through contact, like temperature or filth. As a side effect, our minds apply the same rules to non-physical elements too. Objectively, we know that divorce isn't contagious. Subconsciously, though, we're repelled by a souvenir of it. I don't have any answers for these stuff, folks. I enjoy the stories, though. I like the idea. I do think it's strange that so many of us believe in a little bit of magic. I hope you enjoyed this look into Lucky Charms. I'm Kyle Filson. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Hey-o.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you start looking into these lucky charms from all different cultures, whether it's four-leaf clovers, rabbit's feet, different talismans, amulets, things that people think bring them luck, whether it's a family heirloom that's passed down or just somebody has an amazing stroke of luck and they happen to have a quarter in their pocket. It's kind of rare. They carry that around from that day forward. That's their lucky quarter. They'll give it to their grandchildren. That's my granddad's lucky quarter. It's like we put this magical power on inanimate objects, and it doesn't matter if it's truly magic or not. They've done research and people perform better when they have these objects. Like, it just makes you feel better. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a better shot now, because I remember when Jacob was little and he was playing baseball and he was having trouble. They were trying to get him to steal bases a lot and he was getting thrown out a lot. And I remember my father-in-law gave Jacob some rock and he said it was a lucky rock. And if you're having trouble, put this in your left pocket. And Jacob did good a couple of years. And he's like, well, did you have the rock in your pocket? And he did. And he thought that having that rock would help him. When I asked my father-in-law, and he was like, no, I just picked that up in the freaking driveway.
Right.
It has no power.
But he knows Jacob does have power.
He thought he did, and it helped him. Right? There's like little things like that. People put on a special.
Well, it's proven medically. The same thing with the whole placebo effect. The whole deal.
So the question is it only a thought that it's affecting, or are we able to imbue magic into items?
I like to believe that that's what it is.
Well, I mean.
Because how can you prove one way or the other? Right.
How can you can't? Prove that's the
you
thing.
You can't. And so I choose to believe that when you put your belief in it, not all the time, but that could actually help, that you could get it imbued. But I'm one of those guys. I'm not superstitious at all, but I love the idea.
But I bet you there's something that you possess, something that is important to you, whether it's something handed down, whether it's something that you like. I don't know. You might have a guitar pick from Jimi Hendrix. You might have an autographed letter from Lyndon Baines Johnson. I don't know. I bet there's something that you have that for whatever reason, you just feel better if you're carrying that. Like, are there special occasions when you dress up that you always carry this Zippo lighter with you, or you always carry?
No, man.
You don't have nothing?
No, I really don't. I don't
have. You're odd. Something's wrong with you.
Yeah, for real. I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't have.
Well, no wonder your luck's so bad all the time.
Yeah,
you don't have any lucky items.
I got to get a lucky item.
Right?
Yeah. No, I've never been. I mean, it's one of those things I'll carry it in like a pocket knife till it breaks or whatever. And then I get another one or what, like that whole deal. But I don't have anything like this is what. Like I said, I'm not that guy. But also, too, now, who do you think is the worst group of people? I believe baseball players are the worst, the most superstitious.
Oh, I thought you were just saying, who's the worst group of people? Baseball players?
Baseball players. You guys are terrible, man. I hate everything about stealing all the time.
You're talking about superstitions.
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing. When through the research of doing stuff, I found a lot more. And you could get into that as a whole show, is just superstitions and where they come from.
Yeah.
Why do people have these? Why there's different superstitions depending on the sport, depending on the culture? Why there's the same superstition in two places at the same time? It's very, very fascinating.
I can't help it but I like to put the validity into it, because I like to think of it as their way of like fighting evil, right? Like when you see all the old movies and you've got like the priests are fighting against the demons, or the old shamans are fighting, and I love the idea of them having like turtle shells and reading the bones and I don't know why. I just enjoy it. That just feels right.
Yeah. I mean, like in some of the things are crazy, like the story where the guy in World War I got shot and the penny that was in his pocket stopped the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the penny. You can see it. I mean, it's like in a museum now. Like, what are the odds? That was his lucky penny before he got shot. He'd been carrying it for years.
So it makes you wonder again, like we talk about, if you can imbue, let's say, a magic thought. If you give a thought process, like we've talked about with black-eyed kids or with anything, it seems like they've grown, right? Slender Man. These things have grown and grown into something that is physical. If you carry something like that all the time, if there's bad feelings in a house, then you have to be able to imbue it with some sort of affection or love or belief in its ability.
Mm-hmm.
You would think you could pass that on.
Yeah, you can, I believe. And then vice versa. For the light, there's also the dark. There's the, you know, there's lucky number 7, but there's unlucky number 13. You know, there's a black cat crosses the road.
But then that's lucky for some other people.
Right. If you break a mirror, you get 7 years bad luck. Like, where did all this? And people start thinking, they were, like I mentioned in the segment, they did a study on eBay of people selling engagement rings.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that people did not want to buy them if they came from a relationship where the people got divorced. Like, somehow that magic is going to go to that ring and that rock, but they don't sell.
What do you carry with you? What do you have? Well, what do you pack around with you all the time on special occasions? Besides that mustache, what do you carry?
On very special occasions, I have an old pocket watch.
Yeah, word.
That was my grandfather's. And I just always thought it was cool. I don't think, believe that it has a special power, if that's what
it's
you mean.
It's just neat to carry.
But I know when there's big events, I always carry that, whether the day I got married, different things, important things, I carry that with me, and it makes me feel better.
That's good.
I don't know why.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, people all the time, they'll have an incredible act. And it can be luck, like they hit a hole in one, right, while they're playing golf. They'll save the ball. And it'll be sit on their bookshelf for years. Because I was with one of my friends, Travis. He's a terrible golfer.
Oh, he's awful.
But I saw him hit a hole in one.
He's an awful disc golfer, luck. Too. He's terrible at disc golf.
They sent him, they have a plaque that he had, the scorecard and everything is in glass. And you can see on there, our scores are horrible. I think he shot like a 120 or something, but had a hole in one.
Had a hole in one. Yeah.
And people, they love those mementos and they pass down. And it's just a strange, and what's strange is that it's universal, like I mentioned. It's not just here, everywhere. You could go to the deepest, darkest bushes of Africa and there'll be like somebody has little to nothing, but they might have like a magic stone or something that they believe.
It's a talisman or something that was passed on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So very interesting. Also, speaking of interesting, check this out. I got a story from a listener before we get out of here.
Yes.
It says, boys, I'm still a little apprehensive to report this, and I haven't said anything about this to anyone until now. Every week, you talk about sharing the stories with you and the listeners, and I decided I'll just stay anonymous and share it.
Well, don't worry. We won't tell anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know your real name, so. It says, this event occurred on July 15th, 2001. It was about 3 a.m., I was traveling on Route 26 from Idaho Falls to Jackson, Wyoming. I barely made it to work in Jackson that morning, and I was in a state of shock and a bit worried when I arrived that someone might come after me. On my way, I saw these lights as I came up the road. From far off, it looked like a giant Ferris wheel leaning on its side. I thought to myself, man, that's odd. Out here in the middle of nowhere, in the woods, what is this? But as I got closer, I realized it was surrounded by vehicles. Big military vehicles. White vehicles. Men in hazmat-looking suits and men with guns. It was down in a small valley, and the road I was on began to climb up around a mountain, the one that was headed toward Jackson. So I had a bird's-eye view by this time. I slowed down, almost to a stop, and I realized that this thing was not a Ferris wheel. It was a huge spaceship. It had crashed, and I almost wrecked staring at it. I couldn't hear or see anything. I was in complete shock. It had to have been at least 80 or 100 feet across and was shaped more like you see on a typical TV show, a disc-shaped thing with a portal door at the base. It had windows all around the middle of the ship, and the base had colored lights. I noticed red, blue, and orange. By this time, I started coming back to my senses, and I realized I might be in danger. Men began running to their vehicles and waving their arms and yelling. I even saw a few drawing their firearms, heading up the mountainside towards me. Needless to say, I took off, pedal to the metal, no exaggeration. It would take them a minute or so to get back on the road because there was only a crude, rough road winding down to where the craft was. So I immediately had an advantage. I barreled up the road, reaching 90 miles an hour in my Jeep Grand Cherokee 4x4 on a winding incline with a cliff on one side and a wall of a mountain on the other. Suddenly, animals were running across the road, up the mountain, away from this site. I kid you not, there were raccoon, deer, all sorts of creatures just migrating away from the area. I was slowing, then speeding, weaving in and out of these creatures. I hit the mountainside more than once and almost careened off the cliff several times. I'm telling you, it was the most blood-pumping thing that had ever happened to me. And I have been in some hairy situations in my life. All kinds of things raced through my mind as I sped away from there and looking in the rearview mirror. Thankfully, I got away. I started taking random small roads as soon as I saw them in order to lose a trail. I meandered all the way the rest of that morning, and I arrived in Jackson just before 8 a.m. as my shift started. I thought about what had happened, and my friends all told me I looked like something was wrong. I said, oh, I'm just not feeling well. But what was bothering me was exactly what was going on back there. Would it be on the news? Of course not. Were those men after me? I don't know. Also a feeling of wonder and excitement because I had witnessed something that I would call others crazy for believing in. It was really true. There is something out there. Jeff. So Jeff, you saw a crashed craft. Now, it doesn't mean it's extraterrestrial. It could be some kind of top secret thing we were working on. But what about that? You see a crashed looking vehicle, a bunch of military guys, a bunch of guys with guns, hazmat suits, like something out of a movie. Maybe it was a movie set. Maybe you didn't know they were filming out there. Could have been.
Dude, that's crazy.
But what a crazy story, right? Very, very odd.
Well, and it goes back to what I was talking about not long ago. We talked about these crashes. Is I wonder how many of them have happened that nobody knows about.
Yeah, far more, I'm sure.
Right?
More.
Like one, like that one there. The dudes, they're already on it. Like they may have already been tracking it. They watched it go in. They watched it do its whole thing. Boom, and get by there. And again, they probably went to try to stop him. After he drove off, they were like, well, I mean, who's he going to tell and who's going to believe him? Let's just get this and get out of here.
Well, and Jeff mentioned that he never told anybody till now, but I mean, he never was visited by Men in Black or anything like that. But maybe he wasn't visited because he didn't tell his story.
Yeah.
And just like we talk about in the show all the time, how many people like him have had a strange sighting and they just never come forward?
Quite a bit.
I'm sure quite a bit.
That is still, I mean, that's a privilege to get to see, to be like, that's exactly what I saw.
Yeah, I would love to see something
that's
like
crazy.
That,
right? Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, thanks for sharing. If you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. It's 888-393-BRUD. Let's think about our wonderful sponsor, Athletic Greens and AG1. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. Check it out. Cam, what do you got planned for your week?
Man, I don't know. I'm going to be building some stuff and I hopefully try to squeeze in some disc golf one evening if we can get that swung, but I don't know. Depends on what this rain does.
Sounds like a plan. Well, I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.